And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Come on now. There we have. That's weird, man.
That was really strange. It was fine, and then all of a sudden.
I will. I'll edit out the bullshit in the middle. I will edit it out. So my question, I was asking was, like, we use the word love in so many different ways that I almost think it confuses us when we try to use it as an application. When we try to do love as a verb, because you can say, like, I love playing guitar. My job is the show. I love my job. I love my daughter. Those three have nothing to do. They're all three completely different emotions. How do you help people figure out, like, what love is?
I don't know that we need to figure it out. I mean, those are different aspects of who you are. The energy of that in each of those different situations is very similar. The energy of loving music, loving this show and what you do because you're helping people, loving your daughter, loving somebody's, you know, somebody loving their job, their family. It's a similar energy. It's a higher vibration. And that higher vibration can be present in a myriad of situations and in a myriad of aspects of who we are. So,
I don't often say this. I'm learning a lot. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank
you. What do you love?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I love my children. I love my family.
Yeah.
How many children? I have 2 girls.
How old?
They're amazing. I light up. I think love is anytime you light up, right? I light up talking about
how
both
old
of them. I love my.
I'm sorry. How old are your children? How old are your daughters?
What? Oh gosh, 26 and 24.
So you're through the whole driving thing, right?
Oh gosh, yes, yes. I am. I have some nephews going through that, so I can relate.
I have hair, but not for much longer because of the. Okay, great. So sorry, what else do you love? You love your daughters. You love.
I love my extended family. One of my youngest actually had a baby last year, and he is just a precious love. So I love little baby Henry. I love, you know, sister, brother, dad. I just have the most amazing family. I love learning about the saints in history. I love learning about Joan of Arc. I love connecting to people with stories like that. I love helping people more than anything. You know, when I work with my clients and they see themselves in a different way, in a bigger way, because it's always a bigger way, a better way, a more expanded way, a higher consciousness way. I love that because I love seeing themselves open themselves up to the idea that there's so much more for them, that who they are is so much bigger for this planet than they ever realized. So I love that. I love this
do
work.
What does it feel like when you get I don't want to say messages. When you communicate, when mm-hmm. What does that even feel like?
Yeah, channeling. It feels different. It feels depending on the energy that's coming in, it will feel different. When, and hopefully this is okay to talk about, but when it's Yeshua or Jesus, it's so loving. It's just so loving and understanding. And oftentimes I just feel him, you know, putting his hand on my heart as he's sharing very simple messages to just help me reconnect. In other cases, it's I'm learning. For example, if Mary Magdalene comes in, that energy it's teaching me something. She wants me to see things a little bit differently. She was so aware of what was happening back then. She did not have any illusions. And she understood what Jesus was doing was showing us the way mm-hmm. that you've talked about. All about love, understanding, forgiveness to everybody. And so she helps show me what that looks like in certain day-to-day situations. She, you know, I had the honor of being in the cave that she supposedly spent the last 30 years of her life in. I was there in France last
year. I didn't
know
she spent 30 years in a cave.
Supposedly, oh, wow. yes, in southern France. And it is in the area of France, very close to where the Cathars were back in, you know, the 11th century. And, you know, just being able to ask her questions and have her show me how she was nourished by the water, by the coating, by the energy in the earth that was present, that is present for all of us. It's like the soul of the world is there to serve as bread of life to us, just as Jesus is. I believe God gave us ways to connect to that bread of life, to Jesus, to that energy, to that sacred nature, through our connection to the earth and the sacred nature of the earth. She helps me to see that. The Virgin Mary comes in with energy that helps me. Often, the Virgin Mary comes in with messages for other people who need to be present to that love or need that love. And so she will come in and say something that she wants me to share with someone so that they understand just how deeply they are loved. So it feels different depending on the energy that's coming in.
How do you discern? So we talk a lot about mental health around here, and how do you discern authentic voice of Virgin Mary from just Lisa having a bad day and thinking the wrong thing? Like how do you discern that?
I think with all the work I've done, I've just gotten to a place of knowing. I know if I'm hearing something that it's authentic, because it doesn't happen all the time. It'd be different if I was hearing it all the time and getting messed up or confused between my own to-do list and what I'm really supposed to do because an energy has come in and asked. If I'm hearing that, it's generally because I'm in a very sacred space asking for that direction. And I'm not sure who's going to come in, but I recognize who's coming in and what they're sharing. And I see as well. So I don't just hear, I see that energy show up and show me something. Perhaps show me giving a chalice to someone, which is sharing wisdom with someone. So I'll understand that as well.
How do you reconcile, I think Christianity, obviously, like everything else, is evolving, right? And you have to and you have to reconcile that the Bible's not literal. There are other pathways, or I guess that's my question. Do you believe there are other pathways? Because the scripture is, this is the one life. There's and you get to a fork in the road, and that fork in the road, you either pick heaven, you know, you're judged, and blah 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 blah, and there's maybe sprinkled in. Although I had to read the Bible three times, cover to cover, I didn't pick up a lot of reincarnate vibes about reincarnation or anything. So is it difficult to carry a faith where you depart from it to such a degree?
I don't think it's difficult. I don't see it as difficult. I see it as I work very hard across all types of things, politics, whatever it is, to observe, but not absorb.
I like that.
To recognize and see, but not absorb it in. I can't deny the very first time I heard a voice, it was Archangel Michael's. It could not have been more clear. I had somebody very close to me who had been in a car accident, and I heard Archangel Michael's voice say he was protected. We were watching over him. And then another situation very soon afterwards where I was physically unable to move. I was in my house, and I just suddenly, I couldn't move because I was being shown something about a particular relationship. And I just couldn't move until I saw it and understood the message that I was being shown. I can't deny those things were happening. And I believe it's there for all of us. It's, you know, just being open to it. So I don't necessarily see it as difficult. It is what it is. And I try very much to, I talk a lot about divine feminine and divine masculine energy. The divine feminine energy is receptive. I try to be very open to receiving what is coming in, whether that's a message or seeing something or a partnership, relationship, friendship, whatever is coming in, to just receive. Because as a businesswoman, I'm very comfortable in my masculine energy of directing and, you know, all of that. So for me, it's not about understanding or deciding. It's more about being open to just what is coming in. And again, observing and not absorbing, being really, just really discerning what is there for me to receive.
Do you meditate? What's your practice?
Yes. Yeah, but
what's your practice?
Yeah. What's my practice? I mean, it's probably not like the traditional thing. I just really connect, just breathing, connecting with, I feel very connected to the archangels. So I connect with the archangels, I connect with source, connect to the earth because of that sacred energy in the earth. And then just am very present to my intentions, my intendingness, and being open then to trying to be in a sacred energy as possible, to be open to whatever messages are there for me in that moment.
I went through this period where I had relationships with angels, but kind of now I don't, and it's my fault. I always wonder why. I would love for somebody to just focus on angel work and just say, like, look, there's so much. But I'm just going to zone in on just, this is how you work. This is how you collaborate with angels. I've seen stuff happen when you do. So I get it. But do you have tips for that?
Well, they're there for you. You have angels present with you right now. It's for whatever reason, you maybe closed yourself off from that. It's just opening yourself back up to that and to recognizing that they're there and just feeling their presence.
Seeing things that other people don't see, right? Which you do, and being open to a different wavelength. And like, I always use the analogy of a dog whistle, and I say, look, man, there are sounds that I can't hear that my dog can. So it is arrogant of me to think I hear all the sounds. I clearly don't. And same thing with seeing. And it's also arrogant of me to think that I hear everything you hear, because you and I are different. So I'm totally bought in on you hearing and seeing and feeling and communicating things that I don't, Mike. Because I like you said, you know the science way better than I do. But I do have a dog, so I get I. So, you know, you don't have to walk much farther than that for me. it must be tough in interpersonal relationships to do you need people on your frequency, or are you able to navigate that?
Oh gosh, I'm able to navigate that.
How?
I'm very open about right. who I am as well. Yeah.
But it, do you find yourself? Do you view what you do as an art or a craft or a science or a?
No, I just view it as
okay.
who I am, and what I've been really surprised by, particularly in the last few years. Particularly through COVID, was the more I talked about it, the more I discovered I was attracting similar people into my life, the more I realized so many people out there want to talk about these things and are afraid to. They don't know. They're worried that people are going to look at them. Judge them. And yeah, so there are so many more people out there who do see themselves as spiritual or understand there's higher energy. They understand there's a way to connect with each other in a different way, and they're open to that. And I think the more you do the work, the higher your vibration, the more you're attracting people.
Right.
You know, like attracts. Well,
one of the things you've done though that's really, really cool, which I was not able to do, was navigate corporate and integrate the same time. Because, you and I can go on LinkedIn right now, pull a random pool of 1,000 people and say, listen, we want you to integrate spirituality, working at a higher level, pushing love, finding your purpose. And we want you to be forthright about that as part of your journey. And 1,000 of the 1,000 will not answer us. It's such a hard path.
Yeah. Well, but I think if they were alone in a room, you'd find out that 900 of them
were. Yeah, if they're alone in a room, but the problem is they're never alone in a room, right?
Right. But that's how I integrated it with team members who were. I hear people say something and I realize that's unworthiness that they're feeling. And so later in a meeting, just one-on-one, hey, you're worthy of this. Seeing what's happening, hearing what they're saying, and seeing how they're seeing themselves as less than or not worthy or whatever, however that shows up, then I can in one-on-one situations with them, help them see themselves the way I see them. And again, sometimes I'll hear something from somebody say, tell so-and-so whatever. And I won't necessarily say, the Virgin Mary wants you to know. It's more, hey, I would love to see you being more gracious to yourself or understanding. This is a long process. Look at the way senior leadership responded. They see you. They see your progress. This is going to be a long journey, whatever that looks like. But that's how I would integrate it, was really in my relationships. And when I would have lunches with people one-on-one, they would open up about spiritual work. I discovered that one of my colleagues in the compliance world, which is highly, a lot of masculine energy, directives,
hello, Finra,
rules, was in a whole divine feminine group of women. I had no idea. So that's how I integrated and continue to integrate with, people. One of my most recent clients does work all over the world with organizations and has done so much spiritual work on the side. We'll go off and do a week-long shamanic retreat or go to Sedona or whatever that looks like. And he said he had never seen anything like the report that I gave him, where I laid out that map that I talked about and said, this is actually where you can go. And 25 years of work, he had never seen anything like that. Similar situation with another leader in Australia. I had been searching for years for his purpose and trying to understand and spending a lot of time and money doing various practices. And once you just show them, this is how you came in, this is who you can be at your highest self, they can stop seeking and start living it. Choose then to be that. and understand that being love for each other is truly divine, is living as Jesus.
Right. What's your relationship to money?
My relationship to money?
Yeah, because that's also for somebody like you that has enough baskets to be able to carry Catholicism and Buddhism and quarterly reports all in your basket.
Yes.
That's tough.
Yeah, money is energy. Money is just energy flowing.
Okay.
It is being open. It is being open again to, and it's that receptive energy of, I am open to what comes in. What are the opportunities? It is very much related to that abundance mentality of limitless possibilities and just staying open to that and allowing that. Oftentimes, you know, that path of the lower self where we're trying to master our mental body or our thoughts. Our thoughts are associated with the particular job we have and the salary associated with that. And there's a limiting impact of that in saying money equals this title, equals this certain pot, instead of seeing money on the planet as it's just energy flowing. That's a great idea. I'm going to support that. What can I learn from that? How can I take that over here? If you look at people who are truly wealthy, they're just doing all this stuff. They're seeing an open, unlimited treasure trove of abundance.
Do you find, because I have been in those rooms, and do you find that I have a particular dollar amount, but do you find that there's a particular dollar amount that once a person achieves a certain level, it kind of breaks them?
Breaks them in what way?
Emotionally. Like I've worked with the founder of BlackRock. I've worked with, and I see these people. I saw these people I worked intimately with them, and they get to a point where, it's like the billionaire that thinks he's poor because he knows that somebody who's got 30 billion. I think there's a level at which you get broken with money. That at which your perception is just foggy. It just doesn't work anymore.
Well, I guess I would ask if they were always, if you get to the billion and you just want 30, you're clearly in a low, you still have not mastered your lower self, because that is just an illusion. And there's nothing wrong with wanting 30 in order to help the planet. It's vibration's all about, is it ego-centered or higher heart-centered? Right. Higher consciousness is all about doing things from the higher heart. I'm creating for the joy of creating and all that it's bringing to people. I just met yesterday with a gentleman who has his own company and is creating more companies to help students. And they want to make money doing it so that they can fund the scholarships, so that, you know, these kids don't have to pay to go to these schools. It's not nonprofit, it's profit to further more flow, doing more things. That's high vibration. That's higher consciousness.
Yes.
That's wanting more to do more. The other person, I don't know that they were probably always down there, but in that place of illusion. Of ego, that this somehow is, the money represents my value. It doesn't. We're all equal. We're all equal in the eyes of God, right?
Do you work out?
And do I work out? A little bit.
Because my experience is that physicality is integral to climbing the mountain that you described. that yeah. What physicality in all manifestations, but you know, for me the most impactful has been working out. But I find the your brain is in various states, right? And in order to be open mm-hmm. to the mountain that you want to climb, my brain has to be in a specific state. And I find physicality at, integral in opening that. And so I did. Does that have space in your practice or no? Because there's some people I talk to. Some Because some people I talk to. Just,
I would say, and actually, it's interesting that you asked that because when things started to first open for me, when I first started to hear, you know, Archangel Michael, I had just started ballroom dancing.
There you go.
I had taken it all. And it talk about rewiring your brain.
What am I?
Because, you know, when it comes to tango, I'm so used to being in control and in charge. And here I am. And, you know, my partner's trying to move me one way. And I'm like, I am not ready for that.
That describes every relationship I ever had. Somebody's trying to move me one way and I'm not ready for it. I get it. That's so funny you say.
Being open to letting go and following, because if I didn't, the entire dance would fall apart, right? The harmony between us completely collapses if you're not open to the flow and allowing the flow in both sides. Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely can relate.
It's so funny you mentioned ballroom dancing because one of my so the show is 40% musicians, 40% mental health practitioners like yourself, and 20% trainers because they just what I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. And one of my closest friends is a trainer. He actually directs a whole division of personal trainers, and he just got into ballroom dancing. And he's like, this is way harder than training. Way harder than.
Very. Because it's not just physical. It is emotional. And it is, talk about looking at yourself in the mirror. And being, trying to do a tango and recognizing that I have a block in literally letting this gentleman lead me around the floor. You know, it forces you right away to deal with so much and balance and it's not just big moves, it's that hold and that just that little bit of pressure between the two hands, the two partners, giving in harmony to hold that stance. It is so it's one of the best things I think that you can do to learn more about who you are. And I'll say I very early on in my training, ballroom dance training, had this crazy idea that okay, I'm going to go compete nationally in.
Did
Vegas.
You do it?
I did it, and the reason I did so well is I just let go. I had two instructors, and they convinced me, in order to do one of the categories, you had to do the tango, the foxtrot, and the waltz. And nothing about me wanted to learn the foxtrot. I just wasn't into it. And they said, look, Lisa, we really want you to compete in this category. You're so good at these other things. And it was like 3 weeks before. And I said, fine, I'll learn the foxtrot. I had no business doing the foxtrot in Vegas. But guess what? I took first place.
Congratulations.
Because it forced me to let go and just follow. And I could not have been more in tune with my instructor when we were dancing. And it felt so good to just flow that I was just beaming. And, you know, the judges couldn't stop looking at us because it just felt amazing. And it had nothing to do with paying attention to doing the steps right or having practiced for years. It was all about letting go.
Well, that completely fits with your message because your message is open, right? Like you probably have like five verbs, but one of them is open, and you, it's the same thing when you perform music. When I play out, like I'm doing this guitar series now, right? And like I'm a acoustic rock. Mm-hmm. I'm not even a rock. I'm like a ballad guitar player, finger picker, acoustic. But I'm doing this guitar series with like a bluegrass player, a rock player, a classical player, a ballad player, a slide guitar player, all this stuff. And so I've started doing it. And what I went into it thinking, all right, I'm just going to have to perform at like my highest level because I've been playing for a million years, yeah, because these people are that good and I'm going to have to. And it sucked. And I realized it about 15 minutes in that it sucked. And I'm like, okay, just stop trying. Just be open and do what you do and just make the music. And that, and it was mm-hmm. so much better. So your message.
Yeah. Yeah. You surrender.
Yeah.
That's a new
verb. There we go. There's one of your verbs too. The other thing, I always argue that women are the superior gender, and
I'm just kidding.
You're smarter. You can communicate on multiple levels at the same time. You can withstand higher and lower temperatures than we can. You're more resistant to disease. You're physically stronger pound for pound. But the thing I think that makes women, the thing I think that caps the argument is women can dance with each other. Men can't.
Yeah, that's true.
That's bizarre to me. I was friends with, you'll relate to this. I was friends with a minister who was like, you want to find out what kind of guy you are, dance with another guy. And I love that women actually make a night of going to dance with each other, and men would cringe at that. That's weak on our part, right?
Right. Absolutely. Well, it's interesting you say that though, because I do have a dear gentleman friend from the Netherlands who says he is in a group of like 30 guys who on full moon nights, they go out in the woods and they bang their drums. And most people would never have any idea. But I think men are just craving that type of connection to something.
More so than women, do you think?
I don't know that they dance around, but they let go in a different way.
More so than women, do you think? The craving part.
I have found men more willing recently to be open about the fact that they are craving connection and purpose. Women less likely, because I think they are afraid that it makes them look weak. Now, partly that could be because I'm around so many business women who are in their masculine energy.
Have to be.
So that's just a side thing. But the men seem so much more willing to say, And I'm hearing from men. I was in this group. Everyone, all of my guy friends are talking about how disconnected we feel. We just feel like we're at sea. We're untethered. Still don't know why we're here, what our purpose is. The money isn't fulfilling.
But it's part of what you just said makes me sad, though, because men can. We've gotten to a place where it's not going to impact us that much one way or the other. If I say I want to be spiritual privately to you, but women in the workplace face such a different wall to climb that of course it's harder for them to say, you know, I would like to spiritually connect. I would like to blah, blah, blah. Because the minute a woman says that, you know, it has a whole different coloring to it, and I think that's sad.
I think a lot of women hold themselves back though in the business world because they are not willing to bring half of their superpowers, which are that is their divine feminine half.
You make them
all of that I talked about, letting go.
You make
that,
an amazing that one you make an award. Amazing point. I bet you that should be one of your, I'm trying to think of the word, feminize. That should be one of your verbs too. Just go to work and just be the biggest woman you can be, and you will kick every guy's ass on the planet because you're so much bigger. Right
And do it from a heart-centered place, because that's the other thing too. Women are so afraid that if I get somewhere, some other woman's going to come take it away for whatever silly reason. It just seems like there's a lot of competition between women that is just unnecessary. Whereas if we could encourage each other and support each other, we could do such bigger things. But yes, I think women hold themselves back by not being half of who they are, by trying. And it makes sense mentally, we see men being successful all these years, hundreds, thousands of years. So we follow their behavioral patterns, but that's not who we are at our deepest essence. And it's missing out on half of ourselves. So we're not bringing all of our superpowers to the table. Men do bring a feminine side because the feminine energy is creation. How many men create businesses, strategic plans, even a creative plan? Men create all the time. They're in their feminine energy. It doesn't hold them back. Women are afraid to be more fully in that energy, to let go, to let go and let others, so that they can be mentors and leaders and, you know, help develop those people. That's feminine energy.
Are you musical?
And again, that receptivity is so important as well.
Are you musical?
Not really. Well, as far as playing an instrument, no. Singing, no. I can just dance.
Well, but that first off, that is musical. I answered my own question like halfway through my head. I'm like, stop. Because, dancing is percussion, right? It's hitting something on a specific beat.
Hitting the rhythm.
So that's percussion.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is true.
Most instruments are percussive instruments. Your instrument just happens to be your body. Mm-hmm. Your foot needs to hit the floor at a specific time in a song. So, yes, you are musical. The other thing about dance that I love talking to dancers. The other thing about dance that's fascinating to me is I think touch has such a is so healing. It can be so healing. And but we don't touch each other. My daughter sent me a text the other day, and it's from my daughter's cell phone. And she goes, "Do you remember when we were young? When I was young, we were young. Do you remember when I was young? I used to fight you, and I used to bend your legs behind your head, and I'm like, I can't even answer that text anymore. Like, I had to call and go, is this you? Is this like touch is such a dance is like the one is one area where touch is still it safe and permissive and encouraged, and there's healing in that. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. And I think even about my son-in-law, who said, you know, I can't wait till Henry's old enough that we can wrestle together. You know, for men, there's that wrestling play of that physical connection. Yeah, I mean, absolutely, that connection, that touch. And so much of the work we would do with ballroom dancing, we would do with our eyes closed to try to really make sure we were feeling. How do I know when you're telling me to go right instead of left? What does that feel like? Because I'm not looking at them. Head's over here. What does it really feel like? And it's just really being in tune to that physical connection.
What do you find psychologically is the biggest hurdle for people to overcome to get to your first level?
Believing in themselves. Limited programming.
So our first echo is self-confidence. Like most people just don't believe enough in themselves to. That is a giant knot to untie. How do you do that?
A lot of work. Starting with recognizing that that's what that is. For women, what I have found is even deeper than that. It's the unworthiness. For whatever reason, I don't know if it's a DNA thing, there is this well of unworthiness that women have to look at straight in the eye. And, you know, and that's what I see myself as being for people, being light for that part of their journey. So they're not doing that alone, but looking at it and understanding it and understanding the layers of it and how it holds them back. And that so much of what they see as I'm unworthy of love or attention or being valued or whatever it is comes from societal programming. You're unworthy of love because you don't look like this. All the people on Instagram look like this. That's societal programming. We got to deal with that and remove that from our physical being so that we you know, that layer of unworthiness goes away. Maybe something about when we, you know, were babies or young, and how something somebody said to us or how they treated us made us think we were unworthy of being valued or being loved. Looking at that, addressing it, recognizing that that was a reflection of that person and where they were at that time, and letting it go. So it's work. It's not just seeing it. A lot of people, I hear noise out there about, oh, I have self-awareness, I see that now. Well, it takes a lot of work to release it, to physically let that go from your physical body and your nature, and recognizing every time it's coming back in, and honoring it for 3 seconds or whatever that is, but then choosing not to stay there and purposely sending it away. So that each layer.
You're so right. You're so right. And that was my exercise question. Like, we carry this stuff. We carry it mentally, and there's work to do spiritually, and there's work to do mentally. But we carry this stuff with us physically too, I think. And sometimes the most efficient method of getting rid of it is just purge, man. Just work out till you can't work out anymore, or dance till you can't dance anymore, or dance till you feel good at minimum. Right. Do you get sad anymore?
Oh, of course. Of course. I get tested all the time. Mm-hmm. The tests don't go away. I mean, think about what Jesus went through.
Right. Wow.
And, here he was. There he was on the cross. And here it is, you know, we're going into the Lenten season. You know, forgive them,
but
Father.
No. Knowing what you know, and you have the advantage of knowing it and you have the obligation of sharing this, but you have the advantage of knowing what you know on a deeper level than most, right? Most I will sit in this chair for 5 minutes and try to talk to the Archangel Michael, and it's probably not going to happen today. But you or maybe it will. I know. But you have.
Open yourself right. up to it.
But yeah. But you have the advantage of you have the advantage of you've done that work, right? You have the advantage mm-hmm. of a deep mm-hmm. faith. You have the advantage of a calling. Mm-hmm. So you know your purpose. You mm-hmm. have the advantage of a DNA belief that we come around again. What would a test look like for you? It's you seem perfectly armed. Like, what would a test look like for you?
A lot in my world is sort of in upheaval right now in my own personal world. Just a lot of change, and so how we go through that change and handle that? Yeah, absolutely. And seeing how, you know, when we as individuals go through change, those that we love go through it with us, just in different ways. And how present are we to them and to their experience of our change?
And like, how do you compartmentalize that? Like when you're going through like big like relationship change, for example, when you're going through that, how do you compartmentalize that? And How do you reconcile that? Like, I thought you were part of my purpose. I made a commitment that you were part of my purpose. Turns out I was wrong. Does that cast doubt on everything else, or is it okay for me to be wrong about you and right about everything else? It's so hard when there's personal upheaval, because personal upheaval is hard, but the biggest problem mm-hmm. with it is it casts aspersions over everything else.
I guess I don't see it as being wrong. I see it as that was that part of my path. Okay. And now I'm open to being guided. I stay really connected to my guides, to understanding the next part of the path. That person's not going to be on that part of the path with me.
Right.
It's just how it is. They're perhaps their path, in order for them to fulfill their calling, has to take a different turn. Mm. And you can love people and still choose to follow your own path. And maybe at that time it's not together, and maybe it comes back together later.
Does that
staying really connected to your guidance, I think, is key, and not choosing not to see it as a negative thing.
Yeah.
Which is much easier. Well,
sure, yeah. I was just about to ask you, does it get easier as you get older? To like when love doesn't work?
I think I it's not about getting older. It's been easier the more work I do, because one of the most difficult initiations is the initiation of becoming unattached. Recognizing that if we are all one and we are all love and we are all a reflection of God, we already are everything we want. We don't need to be physically on this planet together forever. We're already eternally forever together as one, as love. So I can let go of the attachment, whether that be to a relationship or to a house or to a job or to a physical place, a certain client relationship or money or whatever that is for people. You know, for example, I'm in the process of moving.
I'm so sorry.
Something I really want to do. Well, it's because of baby Henry. I want to be close to baby Henry.
Moving.
It's wonderful.
I would rather sprain an ankle than go through a move.
Oh, really? Okay. To me, I'm excited, but it affects a lot of people around me in ways that I was not anticipating. Mm. But I'm not attached to the house.
Right.
I'm really trying to help others understand and let go of the attachment to the house and recognize that the house is just simply where we have been. It's been the container for our relationship.
Right.
And the relationship can still go exactly as beautifully as it is to a different house.
If that makes sense. If you
letting go of that attachment.
If you can only have a relationship in this house, you don't have a relationship. You have a house. How deep into Buddhism are you?
It's not something I'm familiar with.
You preach Buddhism, so we've been doing it. We've been doing this for an hour. You have said so many Buddhist things, I'm Buddhist. You have said so many Buddhist things. I'm like in the back of my head. I'm like, she has to have studied the idea of. Your practice of observing but not participating is so Buddhist. Mm-hmm. That's your practice of detachment. I don't need, I want, but I don't need, because need starts to pollute.
Right.
You're the involuntary Buddhist.
That's an interesting title. That's an interesting brand.
There you go. No, but really, like a lot of what you say, and by the way, your vision of climbing a mountain and you know, needing to be here before you can be here, Buddhism. It would be interesting for you to spend a half hour and take a look at Buddhism, because you talk so much Buddhism.
Yeah.
And
oh, that's beautiful.
Thank you for part of your work about, like, you can, if you're willing to do the work, you're almost pure Buddhist. If you're willing to do the work, you can find your true purpose, and you can do it without attachment, mm-hmm. and you can do it without need, and mm-hmm. you can be your mm-hmm. highest self. That's Buddhism. The idea that you can be a Buddha, you can be your highest self is so much of what you do is Buddhism. And then,
I'm blessed to know that. Then there's
the argument that Jesus and Buddha were the same person. Have you ever heard that argument?
Not Jesus and Buddha. I've heard Jesus and others, but not
somebody
Buddha.
But yeah, well, and if you go down, like if you dig into it a little bit, you think, maybe. And then the other thing I heard the other day was that Shakespeare was a woman. That's
an interesting
because theory. And this person used Taming of the Shrew as their argument, and said no man would have tried to make that play where a woman is empowered and she's, you know, she's empowered and she's working the guy and she, you know, she's clearly right. smarter, clearly funnier, clearly in charge. He's, you know, he's following her, but she's, you know, she's acting like none of that is happening because she's that and the reason why nobody knows, like that picture of Shakespeare isn't really Shakespeare. Like that's just a picture that people used. It's not really Shakespeare. Nobody like really knew who Shakespeare was. There's not much biographical data about Shakespeare. So the argument is that Shakespeare was a woman and at the time couldn't produce plays because she was a woman. So she had to adopt this male persona and then persona. Do, which if Shakespeare had met you, maybe she would have used her own face. That should be your tagline. If Shakespeare had met Lisa, she would have used her own face.
And that would yeah.
Right?
That would only make me, if I wasn't controversial already. That's
are you
I love that. I love that theory.
No, it makes a lot of sense. Do you Once people get over self-worth and think, okay, Lisa tells me I buy it, I'm worthy of success, which is like, how are you with cursing? Can you stand cursing?
I don't judge. It's not something do very often.
Getting to the point of releasing of accepting your own worth is a metric F ton of hard work. Yeah. It's really hard to do.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
What's the next step then?
Well, once you can overcome whatever it is that you're holding onto, it's the next step on the initiation. So if you've mastered your lower self, then you're moving up on the higher level of consciousness to integrating into your personality and then allowing your soul to guide you, asking your soul what's next, and then asking your monad and source, what's next? How do I serve you? What's next on my path? What is in alignment with divine will?
Are you
no longer operating as the personality, but seeking to always align with divine will?
Are you like hyper frustrated with American culture? Because American culture is so, look, you're laughing, so the answer is yes. American culture is so antithetical to, I think you talk truth, to the truth that you talk. Do you get frustrated?
I don't, because I'm not attached to it.
Thank you, Buddha.
But I see so many other people. Yeah, frustrated. I'm not somebody who gets very frustrated very often. Because of that, just observe. And because I work so hard to stay aligned, even coming on this show, asking, is this aligned with divine ideal before committing to
it? And you did it anyway. Thank you.
So, and it was aligned with divine ideal.
But I mean, it's hard enough to, like, I couldn't do your job, but if I put myself in your head and I'm going to try to do your job. It's hard enough for me to get John Burton to battle his inner demons and get to the point where he says, all right, maybe I do deserve to do what I'm meant to do. Because it's hard to accept. Like I went through that. Like I did corporate turnaround for 30 years before I did the show. And then all of a sudden I start doing the show and my whole life changes. Mm-hmm. And it turns out I should have been doing it 30 years ago, right? But that's because I got sick. Like I had like a big mental illness and I had to get broken in order to be rebuilt, and it was a blessing.
You had to go through your path,
There's nothing culturally that supported that journey in America. There's nothing culturally. If you get sick and broken, the idea is to rebuild the life you had, not build a new one, because the life I had was two Mercedes in the driveway and a 38-foot boat and blah 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 blah. Mm-hmm.
But which life is more
actually fulfilling? This life kind of pays better too, but
there
But no, this life is way more fulfilling. Way more fulfilling. But there's nothing culturally that supports that. So I'm trying to put myself in doing your job. That would be a mountain I would have to climb over almost every day. Sitting down.
So that's where I have to remind people, as much as you may, there may be nobody on this planet, on three-dimensional planet Earth, there to support you through that. There, you are not alone. And you have God and Jesus and whoever you turn to, Buddha. You are not alone, and you have angels with you, and we all do.
What do you think?
I really work hard to help people understand there is a massive vital force of power with them on that journey.
Do you have to brace your clients? Do you have to say, like, look, we're going to go down this path. I'm going to brace you with this. We're going to go down this path. You're probably going to wind up reinventing yourself. It's going to feel so good. Almost no one in your life is going to accept it because everybody wants you to be the person you were so that they can stay the person they are.
That's the hardest part. I do in many presentations say, look, as you start to, go down your own path and be the person, realize your higher purpose, people are going to try to drag you back down into their own, mud and all the goo and their own pity parties. And you can choose to do that, or you can recognize it's going to happen, understand how hard that's going to be, set up boundaries, and keep doing your own work, because you're the only one who's going to help you realize your soul's true purpose in this lifetime.
Did that happen to you?
And that's your choice.
Did that happen to you?
When
you first got the calling and said, oh, wait a second, it's a bigger thing. What happened to your world?
Oh, I was ready for it. I think I was born knowing there was going to be something bigger, because I, going through like high school and you're trying to figure out what you're going to be in your life, I'm like, nothing feels big enough. I feel like I'm supposed to do something really, really big. And none of these things feel big enough, because they were just so, it's so much of Earth life is an illusion. There's so much.
I'm looking for a pen because I'm writing it down. Go ahead.
There's so much more power in helping people, I think, than having certain titles, head of the United Nations, whatever. I don't know. Depending on how you fulfill that particular role. And this is not a judgment. I don't know who's in that role right now. I'm just saying, I kept seeing particular roles that I was supposed to think about, being a lawyer, being a whatever, that's where you're headed. And I kept thinking, that's not where I'm supposed to go. And I really struggled to figure that out. So now that I figured out this way to show people, wow, it's really big. But, I love it, because it would have helped me, but I needed to go through my own path.
But in fairness, you kind of mastered corporate and then got the, like, you were very successful in corporate mm-hmm. life. And then kind of, I'm saying, got the calling. It's off your divine calling, because I'm borrowing language from your website. You kind of got the divine calling and said, okay, I always knew there was something bigger, but I've built this one life where I'm kick ass, and now I'm going to shift. What happened to your world? Did your world come to you and say, listen, that's a little woo woo, and we like the car we're driving? Or did you get pushback like that? Did it impact your relationship?
No, and it's so interesting you say that, because I've gotten different tests. For example, not a lot of people know that I had a kidney transplant.
Oh, you did?
I did. I went through a period of time where I wasn't sure if I was physically going to survive. And that was a massive test. And I had 9 people offer me their kidneys.
Any matches?
That alone is life-changing.
Any matches from the 9?
Yeah. Not from those 9. And I ended up putting an article in a bulletin, in my church bulletin, and somebody I had never met from church.
No kidding.
came forward. Yeah. Yeah. 18 years ago, later this month. Yeah. So it wasn't like one big thing. It was a journey like this.
Right.
I think.
Yeah. Do you view that kidney as answered prayer, or do you think it was intention mm-hmm. that you put it out there? And
oh, it was so many things. It was all of that. It was the most beautiful part of my kidney transplant story is my donor. Her whole life blossomed.
After
literally, once she made that decision, she didn't want to meet me until she knew that it was going to be a match and it was going to work. And the night before she met me, she went on a match.com date. And she had not been on a date in forever. She had been divorced for a very long time. And she just totally opened up to this gentleman about what she was doing. And he was so supportive that it just created a whole different energy for her. Her ex-husband came back into her life to support her through it. Family members, her family and my family together just blossomed. And she ended up marrying him, and I was at the wedding, and every time she shared her story, her life just got bigger and bigger, and so blessed, and she's so happy. She's the happiest person I know, wow. honestly, on this planet. And so if nothing else, I know I have a happy kidney. And as an Italian, I'm 100% Italian, except
your kidneys.
She's 100% Irish. So my kidney is Irish.
Well, everybody needs one Irish organ. So congrats.
There you go. So I am officially allowed to celebrate St. Patrick's.
Isn't that like the power of good? I'm always struck by that. That if you're just willing to if you're just willing to take the risk and do good, and there's so many examples of this, but we're so resistant to this. If you're just willing to take the risk, I'm just gonna. By the way, that must have been some date. I'm trying to imagine. Like I'm sitting across from somebody on my first match date, and she's like, "Hey, our third date, which I know you're looking forward to, that's not gonna be for a few months because tomorrow my kidney's coming out."
Yeah. Right. And he went to see, we didn't meet each other until a couple weeks before. So we're talking, our transplant was March 27th, early March. And then he was at the hospital, went to the hospital to see her and be there for her. And yeah, I mean, it was just, and she always says, I would do it again in a heartbeat. She had something like 6 weeks off of work that she got for doing this. And by the next week, we were both fine.
Right.
I mean, it's surgery, so I'm not trying to make light of it. But we were both physically fine. It was just a matter of, getting back into, exercising or hiking or whatever that was. But just a blessing in so many ways. And just to see her life open up and blossom and all those people in her life and celebrating
if you're just nice. Willing, you're going to make me cry. If you're just willing to roll the dice on good, and stuff comes back to you, and we see this all the time, but we don't practice it. I don't understand this. Karma, another Buddhist tenet. We know that if you put good out, good comes back, and your donor is Exhibit A of this.
And absolutely. And her name is Rose, which is the symbol of the divine feminine. And so it is like having the blessing of the divine feminine within you.
Do you ever mess with like mediums or psychics or people that see things that way? Or does your faith?
I have not. That has not been my experience, no. And it's not a faith thing. I just haven't
done it.
Been called to do that. Right.
I had a... It's so funny. I had a medium on the show, who her practice was contacting people who have passed and reuniting me, and I was I was pretty skeptical. And she comes on the show and she does her thing, and she could tell like I was pretty skeptical. So when she's done, She goes, because I like, there's some of Christianity. I don't know if this is your experience, but there's some of Christianity that you have to shed. And it's, and sometimes it's hard to do. I grew up Protestant, but I grew up pretty ingrained in a Protestant church. And there's some of it you have to shed in order to be completely open. And part of, you know, especially in Protestantism, contact with the dead is verboten. You just don't do it. In Catholicism, you used to be pray for the dead, and the dead will pray for you. But in Protestantism, you can't do that. So, and I still had like lingering things of that. So she goes, "Why don't you come to my house, and I'm gonna do a reading." So I go to her house, and she does a reading. If you have the internet, and she does, you could have gotten pretty much 93% of everything she told me. So I'm still like a little skeptical, right? But then, so my daughter's name is Gramercy, but at the time I never used her name. I called her the package, which is a whole other story. But I called her the package online, I never used her name. And she's a senior in high school, and she wants to go on this trip to the Bahamas, but this company doesn't allow chaperones, and they get 50-50 reviews, and so there's a discussion going on in the house, right? Like, I don't know. So we finished the reading, and I'm still not sold. But I have told no one. Like, my own wife barely knows that me and Gramercy are having this big debate about going to the Bahamas. We walk down the stairs. She goes, "Can I take a picture with you to promote?" And I'm like, "Yeah, of course." So she takes the thing to promote. And she looks at me. She goes, Graham? And I go, "Gramercy?" And she goes, "Yeah." She goes, "Bahamas?" And I go, "Yeah." And she goes, "She'll be fine." Isn't that weird? So I kind of liken that to like the Lisa experience. Like, she's just like, you see things I don't see. She sees things I don't see.
Well, when you were talking about angels, I heard a voice say he's got angels with
him. Did you
right
really?
Now. Yes.
What else do you?
That's why I said you have angels with you.
That's so funny, because I was going to ask you, and I'm like, no, now you're making it work for free. I was going to ask you, like, do you know that, or are you just?
I know that. So I hope that at some point you will open yourself up to that and ask who it is, and what's there for you.
What's the best way to do that? Just sit and just think it? What's the best?
Light a candle, breathe, connect. Consciously connect to what do you call God or source or high, whatever that is for you, whoever that is for you, connect to that energy, connect to your highest energy within you, your highest self from your heart, and then just open yourself up. You know, is there an angel here for me? And see what comes, see what you hear. See,
I will
happens.
Do that, and I will write you what happens.
What's your name?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I will do that, and I will. Do you have to tap the brakes as a mom all the time? Because if I had the gift of helping people get to their higher power, and I had a kid that I love, I would be. Is that hard?
They start to feel like I'm left. Well, I don't need a lecture, is what I hear, because I go into sort of this, you know, podcast voice. Maybe I don't know. We're just talking, but I'm. Yes, it's very hard for me to just be a casual mom laying around. So, yes, there is that. But I have such a special relationship with both of them, and I am so blessed, and they're doing amazing things. So,
what? All right, give me mom advice. So in my house, I'm, go figure, I'm the talker in my house. So no, like, my daughter was in third grade, and we're like, okay, we got to give her the facts of life talk. And my wife's like, okay, get after it. And I'm like, really? Okay, I'll do it. But now she's 17 and she's going to college and she's pulling apart.
Yeah.
How did you handle that?
Oh, gosh. They didn't really pull apart for me.
Oh,
I was really blessed. Yeah, no, they definitely, I feel like the older they get, the more they need me, just
really?
In a different way. And I would, you know, just, I would ask, what do you need from me right now in your life? What's, you know, how can I best support you? Who do you need me to be for you? Whether that's just to be here listening. Do you want to know that I will be here and listen and I won't say a word? Because sometimes that's it. They don't want to call because as much as they want to tell you, they don't want you to tell you to tell them, okay, do this, do that. They just want to be heard or loved. And so I would just ask, what is it that you need me to be? Is it an ear? Is it a heart? Is it a home for you to always come to? What is it that you need from me? And just having that conversation could really open up a lot, just, you know, really block me out that relationship to grow into.
That's beautiful. But when you were saying, I'm like, can I be a debit card for you? Because I feel like I.
That's all about your own decisions and your own family, yeah, about how that works.
Do you,
so.
do you have, like, operating at the level you operate on, do you have to pray, or are you just in like a constant state of prayer? Because I would imagine, like, I look at prayer as communication, mm-hmm, and you're kind of like, the radio is always on for you. Do you ever have to use it?
The radio is always on. I'm always lighting candles.
Do you?
I can tell when I'm not connected.
So, yeah. So you don't actually have a prayer discipline because you're just doing it all the time.
It just depending on where I am in my day and what I need and, yeah, what I'm seeing. But I am very conscious about in the morning connecting, lighting candles, trying to keep a candle lit all day. If somebody passes, I want to pray for that person and light a candle for them. I have candles for those types of situations, praying for others.
Do you,
being really intentional in the prayer?
Because you're always praying. I mean, you kind of don't have to be, because you always are. Like, if you're always, like, prayer's conversation with God, right? But if you're just always open to conversation with God at any point, like you are, you don't need like a prayer discipline because you're praying all day long.
I think there's something honoring about that discipline and that process.
Okay.
And not taking it for granted or taking it lightly. And it keeps me connected, because it's really easy to get disconnected, especially with everything going on around you in the normal world. The energy at work, the energy at the restaurant, at the bar, at the hair salon, you know, people dumping their stuff. It's very easy to get pulled by that. So that ritual and that process is really important.
Do you have friends where you're moving? Do you have friends where you're going to move, or are you just starting over?
Yeah, I have family there too.
You'll be fine then.
Yeah. But still, I have, you know, daughters connected to this particular house, and so it's real, you know, just opened my eyes to that, and just led to some, you know, really deep conversations about that.
You're really wise. Thank you for doing this. You're like.
Thank you for the invitation. I am so grateful. This was so much fun and such a blessing.
What didn't I ask you that I was supposed to?
If anybody is interested in receiving what we call the Divine Calling Revelation Report, where I am showing at a much higher level what your soul's true purpose is, feel free to email me, lisa@lisapetrilli.com. And we'll have a free call and connect and see if, you know, what you're looking for and go from there.
You hit the, I'm sure people will call. You hit the nail on the head so many times in the last hour and change that. Yeah, no, you have wisdom. It's cool.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going to tell my two daughters.
Yeah, Burton says I have wisdom. So, stop fighting with me about the house.
I'm so grateful.
Stop fighting with me about the house. Burton says I have wisdom. That's the move.
Right. It was such a pleasure. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you. And the website is lisapetrilli.com? Okay.
It is.
Cool.
Yes.
And listener, this woman knows stuff you don't know. So I would reach out. She's good. And she's got a sense of humor.
Thank you.
So that's good, too.
And you're going to write me and let me know what happens.
I absolutely am going to write you and let you know. Thank you. And I'm going to hang up. Just hang on for like 2 seconds after I hang up, because it's got to upload for a couple seconds. So it'll look like we hung up, but we didn't. And thanks again for doing this. You're wise and you're funny. That's a good time. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You are too. All the best. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's see here. That was supposed to leave the studio, but the universe won't let us hang up.
That's right.
Apparently, we're doing such important work connected. That the universe won't let us hang up. Hold on. Lisa, you may just have to sit here for another hour and a half. Oh, there we go. Oh, there we go. Yep. Okay. And...